part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am here with Paul Edwards, and my name is Christian Horn, and this week we are discussing our favorite things of 2014. You thought it was over, but not yet. It keeps coming back like a mechanical shark. It's just 2014 will not go away.
Hey, no fair. The mechanical shark was my favorite.
Mechanical shark of what, 1976 or 2014? Yeah, I guess we've been wanting to sort of discuss like some of the things that we loved of last year, some of the movies, just some of the general stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really funny because I know we had sort of kind of... I don't know. We'd kind of gone back and forth, like, let's pick three things or let's pick this. But I don't know. I started writing stuff down, and my side of the discussion may just be a rambling mess because... and I also realized, like, how much not necessarily new stuff was on there when it, like, came to comics and stuff like that. Just because I'm not, like, a weekly comic reader all that much. But there was stuff that did come out in 2014 that made me very happy, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Some
you
releases.
Know, rambling mess is sort of synonymous with the internet. So.
Yeah, I think you'll be much more organized than I am, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I doubt that.
I don't know. So do you want to get started first? Like, should we start with, like, categories? Or
yeah,
should
we just, like... Why don't we do some... Start with movies.
All right, cool. So... Originally this was going to be like the best of, right? But I can never really do like best of because I can't like pick one like spectacular thing. So why don't you go first and tell me like what some of your thoughts are as far as like the releases of 2014, the movies.
Okay, cool. In 2014, a lot of the movies that I just really dug and enjoyed were small little indie things that got either a limited release or they were pretty much available on video on demand.
Yeah.
That's just sort of the way it ended up happening. Although, you know, I did like a lot of the, you know, sort of major release stuff. Well, you know, like a Lego Movie was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of great things out there. My favorite movies this year were probably... Cold in July.
Never heard of it.
Cold in July. You gotta see Cold in July. It's a sort of neo-noir movie set in Texas, and it is based on a book from a horror writer. And I think you'll really like it. It's got Michael C. Hall.
Hold on a second. Ian is joining us, which...
No way.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone's here.
So Ian has joined us. So Paul, what was the movie that you first recommended? He was saying that he liked a lot of indie movies.
Cool.
Yes. The movie I recommend is Cold in July.
Which I never heard of.
Which you can see on Netflix streaming.
Really?
I believe. Or maybe not. One of these movies. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of another movie. I'm thinking of the other awesome revenge movie this year called Blue Ruin.
Ooh, that was great.
Blue Ruin's
a really
either.
Cool movie. But Cold in July is a neo-noir set in Texas in the late 80s. Michael C. Hall from Dexter. Is the main character.
I think I've heard of this, yeah.
Sam Shepard turns up, and Don Johnson does an amazing job as a... you just got to see him to really appreciate it.
Oh, Sam Shepard's in it.
Yeah, it is. It's got a really cool plot. And you know, it's just a it's very much of a throwback. You know, it's three dudes out for revenge in, you know, different ways, and they all come together to, you know, it sort of turns into a men on a mission kind of movie.
Gotcha.
Really fun, really fun. That's my sort of my number one, like, hey, you might not have seen this, but it's worth a look recommendation.
Oh, I definitely haven't seen that. And and you think that that's available like on demand or like?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Oh, okay, cool. So, or but it's definitely not on Netflix.
I don't think it is. I know, it came out on DVD back in September of 2014.
Cool.
It got a very limited release in the movie theater. I got to see it over at the Pasadena Limley, and it was available on VOD at the same time that it was released theatrically. And
yeah,
actually most of the movies I liked this year were released that way.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. It seems like it's a new trend to release like VOD and, you know, in the theater almost like on the same day.
Right.
Yeah. Which is great for me because I should pay more attention to that stuff because unlike your picks, I don't know, my picks might be more mainstream. I'm not sure because I definitely don't get a chance to go see stuff in the theater, having a kid and, you know, not having to get a sitter to go to the movie. So, let's go to Ian. Ian, what was one of your favorite films? Because what we had said in the intro is it doesn't have to be the best thing. It just has to be, you know, things that we liked about stuff that came out last year.
Well, yeah, mine's more mainstream, but I loved Whiplash.
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
I haven't seen it.
Really, Paul? You need to see it. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. Whiplash was just awesome. I mean, in part because I drum, so it had that going for it.
Yeah.
And then all the other parts, like the acting, directing, lighting, and music.
Yeah.
Just a great movie and a great experience. I saw it with my parents and Heidi as well. We all saw it. They were visiting, and it was a really great experience. I don't want to say too much about it because some people might not have seen it yet.
Like Paul.
But it's just, I don't know. It's just above and beyond. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. I think that's an amazing flick.
Yeah,
it
is.
And one of the interesting things too is it's by Sony Pictures Classics, but it's also through Blumhouse, which is primarily up to this point been a horror.
Makes a lot of sense because to me that thing was really directed like a horror movie, like a thriller, and there's an intensity to Whiplash that is just like. It just grabs you and does not let you go, which is such a bizarre thing to say about a movie about musicians or music.
Yeah.
But it really, that makes a lot of sense because I honestly felt like it's in like my top five of the year. Like, I honestly think that like I was not expecting it to be as insanely good as it was. And I did not expect it. I did not expect it to put me through the emotional ringer and the frenetic. And I love jazz. So I was like, just like astounded with the whole thing. Like, I loved it. Ian, let me ask you this, because I've been trying to, a couple of my friends who are musicians have not seen it yet. And so, what is your take as a drummer or as a musician? I mean, don't spoil anything, but like, what did you feel like after watching it? Because like, does the guy, I think is what's his name, Peyton Reed or something like that?
No, Miles Teller.
Oh, Miles Teller, Peyton Reed. Where did I get that from?
He's the director of the Fantastic Four.
Ah, that's where it is. And Miles Teller is playing. There you go.
Drummer.
My streams crossed. So do you think like he did a really good job of?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had heard several interviews with him. And there were definitely parts where the director had said, listen, I want you to do this. Now, he had previous drumming experience, he said.
Oh, okay.
And he just said he worked the living bejesus out of the parts where it was going to be him.
Yeah.
I definitely think they did have stunt drummers.
Yeah, I think I caught some of that too. Yeah.
But I mean, I saw no fault with any of that. I know Heidi's friend who did study music had certain things to say about the style of the way the teaching was portrayed. But it's no secret that J.R. I was going to say J.R. Tolkien.
We're all messed up.
J.K. Simmons. J.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. There's no secret that he's playing a very domineering, intense type of teacher. So to me, I didn't call into question like, oh, they wouldn't teach that in conservatory. Oh,
but dude, we've run into being an artist, like any kind of artist, like an actor or, whatever. I don't know if mathematicians act that way, but, you know, I'm just saying, like, we've run into teachers like that who are just complete pricks. No, I mean, you guys know what I'm saying. Like, everyone has had that experience where there's just like a hard ass who's just not gonna give you an inch, right?
Right. So, but yeah, on the music level, and I mean, this to me, the miking of the drums and the sound mix was superior. I mean, it is kind of known in the recording world that, you know, not everyone can mic a drum kit quite well. And in fact, if you don't know how to mic a drum kit, you really don't work too much as a studio engineer. And not everyone will get really good drum sounds, but whoever did that movie really knew what the heck they were doing, and I was just totally in awe of that, the drumming and the audio that they got from the drums, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic movie, and for anyone who you don't have to be a musician to love it, it's amazing. It just knocked me on my butt. It just had so much passion and energy, and as you know, you guys know, I thrive off of that. So like, I was like a heroin addict, like at the teat of, you know, the pipe or whatever. I loved it. It was a fantastic movie. But so, you know, speaking of energy and passion, my big pick of the year, the one movie that I remembered the most, like having the most fun watching and just being like, oh my God, this is insane, is The Raid 2. It's at the top of my list, because not only did I have a fantastic movie going experience when I was watching it, it just surprised the heck out of me, you know, because I had seen The Raid and you guys kept saying like, dude, you got to go see The Raid too. I was like, I don't know when I'm going to get to go see it. And I was expecting more of The Raid. And as it went on, I was like, wait a minute, this has a plot and people are talking and they're interacting with each other. It's not just like fight, 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 fight. You know, the first one was like fight, 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 fight. You know, like this one was like talk, 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 fight, 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 talk, 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 fight, 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 fight. You know, so it was a really well-rounded, you know, experience for me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And it really, I said this the other day on Facebook to somebody. I was like, it's like Coppola or Scorsese, like directed a movie and then interjected like crazy Hong Kong, like action fighting scenes. And you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that just like blew me away. And not only that, but when I showed up to the theater, there was only one theater in the Valley that was showing it in Sherman Oaks, this rundown little theater, and I go in. Yeah, it was like the best. I go in, and the guy, an odd guy behind the counter, he's like, "The print's damaged." And I'm like, "What do you mean the print's damaged?" He's like, "The print's damaged." And I'm like, "Well, have you seen it? Like, what?" "No, I haven't seen it. I'm just telling you that the print's damaged. If you don't like the movie after the first 20 minutes, you can leave." And I was like, "All right." So I go in and I sit down. And it's like I'm watching like a 70s grindhouse.
Like
it was great. Like, and you know, there's only two other dudes in the theater. And I seriously felt like I had time travel back to like 1970 something. And like, was watching a movie in Times Square, you know what I mean? Like some crazy, and it was just such a good experience. So like for that reason, among others, like The Raid 2 just blew my mind in 2014. And I don't know what it's going to be like when I eventually get the Blu-ray of that, because
you're going to be like, oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, I know. Oh. I know. I'm going to be like, oh man, this doesn't hold up. Like, you know what I mean?
No, dude, the story in it was amazing.
Yeah.
And the action was fantastic. You know, I mean, really, he's sort of the director to beat when it comes to action.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I was telling somebody after I saw it, it was like, as much as I loved Captain America, the Winter Soldier, I was like, The Raid 2 makes Captain America, the Winter Soldier look like they're playing patty cake. Like, it was just like insane. The car chase alone towards the end of the movie, yeah, I was just like, you know, literally like my hands in my mouth, like almost biting my nails, like, oh my God, this is insane. And, you know, I'm jaded, so I've seen a lot of stuff. And I was just like, wow, they really knocked it out of the park with me. So, you know, I absolutely
loved
it.
That's a good call, Christian. When did that come out? That was the beginning of the year, though, right?
I believe it was the beginning of the year. At least that's when I saw it.
Gosh, you know, I can't believe it, but I actually forgot about it. That movie I had seen on a crazy adventure, too. No one wanted to go see it with me, and there was, like, one show playing at Universal Studios at, like, 10:50 at night on, like, on a Tuesday.
You had to go to Universal Studios, you poor bastard.
Yes, I rode the tram up with a bunch of tourists like a jackass. and I was just, I was like, I knew I had to see it in the theater.
Yeah.
At any cost. And when I did, I walked out of there and was just so inspired. It's an inspirational movie, and you feel like at any moment someone might die in the movie.
Yeah.
It's so
intense. I feel
like
at any minute, like, some of them could jump out of the screen and kick me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kick my spleen out through my, you know, back of my head.
Yeah, and
it keeps one-upping itself. By the time it got to the point where they were fighting in the wine locker with, like, mini, like, sickle.
Oh, my God.
Sword things. Yeah, I was like, how is this happening? How is this happening?
Well, that's the genius of the second one, because the first one is like bam, 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 and it's crazy and it's intense. But like with an action movie like that, you almost run into the danger of like desensitizing the person that's watching it. And like The Raid 2 gave you like the breathing space, and then the crazy stuff starts happening and you're just like, oh my God, because you're kind of like lulled into like, oh, this is kind of calmed down now. And then it just like starts going bum, 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 bum. And it was just like fantastic. Yeah, it was great. Great stuff. Great stuff. So what category should we talk about next? What were some of our other favorite things? What do you think? Like television?
Yeah, let's do television.
Television.
It's a natural move on from, you know, the movies.
Moving pictures. Yeah.
Moving pictures.
Absolutely.
What constitutes TV? A non-Netflix shows?
No, Netflix constitutes TV.
If Netflix constitutes television.
You watch it on the TV. So
I would say anything that has, you know, seasons.
Episodic.
Anything that's got episodes and seasons counts as television these days.
I would say like a minimum of like 100 or something. I mean 100. A minimum of 8 episodes.
And, you know, this
or six.
This year, like, this is harder. This is the hardest category.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, my favorite thing, because there was so much good television last year.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
If I'm going to go with anything, I'm going to go with Fargo.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll try to be, you know, relatively spoiler free here. Yeah. But Fargo, you know, it's based in a very roundabout way from on the movie by the Coen brothers back in like 96.
Yeah.
And it is the story of basically the devil himself, played by Billy Bob Thornton.
Nice.
He's a hitman who just delights in fucking with people.
Uh-huh.
In every every way, shape, or form. I mean, he's just like the most ruthless but hilarious character like I've seen on television in a long time.
Oh man.
I mean, there are moments where you're just like, no, he's not going to do what I think he's going to do. And he not only does it, but he does it with like just this total glee just to see what'll happen. He's the kind of person who would go up and, you know, like hit a hornet's nest just to see what would happen. And he's going through this small town in Minnesota and he crosses paths with Martin Freeman, who does one of the best slow burns I've seen on like a television show. I mean, the slow burn from, you know, put upon, you know, man who's just being bullied by everybody to the point where like he finally just sort of snaps.
Yeah.
It's an incredible performance, and it's balanced out by Colin Hanks playing a police officer, and but the real star of the show is Alison Tolman. She's incredible. She plays a deputy called Molly Salverson. And she does such a great job of sort of echoing the goodness of you know, the sheriff from the first movie, but without like replaying that performance, you know, but like still having like that good heart where you're just like, oh man, like, you know, you just don't want to see anything bad happen to her. And
yeah.
It's some of the best television I've seen. Like at the end of every episode, I just could not wait for the next episode.
Man, it's like, that was totally on where I think there was like inundated with like so many shows. And I was just like, I can't get to it. And now I'm going to have to check it out because I'm dying to. It hasn't shown up on Netflix, or I don't even think it's on Amazon streaming or anything. So maybe the discs have come out.
It was a FX show.
Yeah.
And I believe it is on disc, but I mean, it was just so solid. You know, I'll be honest with you, like this whole sort of like favorite thing. It came down on a two-way split between this and True Detective.
Oh my God. I totally forgot about True Detective.
I never saw that yet.
Oh.
And the thing that tipped Fargo in the favor of Fargo was just how fun Billy Bob Thornton was.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. I totally forgot about True Detective. I may have to reassess my pick, but I don't know. Ian, what about you?
This is tough because the only stuff I watch on TV is, I was going to say The Shaws of Sunset. That had a really good season. Do you guys ever see that?
No, I've never heard of it.
That's reality, right?
No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, wait a minute.
I don't watch The Shaws of Sunset.
I was like, since when?
Gosh, you know, I got to say, TV-wise, I'll go easy and I'm just going to call The Flash.
Nice.
I didn't get to see Fargo and I didn't watch True Detective. I did start some older series. I did start Mad Men, but I couldn't even make it through. I don't think I got to season 2.
You got to watch season 2. You got to get to season 2 with Mad Men. I'm telling you. I watched the first season of Mad Men and I'm like, what's the big deal? And then when season 2 kicked in, I was like, I was all in. Yeah, yeah.
I really like I just really like The Flash. I got through season 1 and 2 of Arrow as well. I don't watch Arrow on TV. I only watch Flash on TV. I like it, the simplicity of it. I like the unapologetic nature of it. And it's just a lot of fun without a lot of baggage. Even Arrow started to weigh me down a bit. You guys have seen seasons 1 and 2, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there was just so much killing and psychological warfare at the end of season 2 that it was really wearing me out. I mean, I would have to have talks with Heidi and say, this Deathstroke guy is really, really causing a lot of trouble. But with Flash, you know, I just got to say, for the fun factor. Now, I do watch MasterChef Jr. as well. And I gotta say,
I watched that show too.
I'm a sucker for that show.
I don't even know what it is.
I'm glad. So I'm so glad, Paul, that you watch it because.
Well, Christian, you know Master Chef from When Alejandra.
Yeah, was, yeah. I read, yeah.
Master Chef Junior's the same thing, but it's got kids.
So they yell at kids?
No,
that's
no,
horrifying. They're, I don't want to watch that.
No, it's
much. They're much kinder to the children than they are to the adults.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like I also do know that since it's television, like, you know,
right,
even though they show the kids doing everything, like, I know that they probably have people who professionally plate them, and you know, like, I'm reasonably sure the kids get a hand in, you know, things getting made. But you know, yeah, overall, it's a much better show than the MasterChef is, because you know, in MasterChef, the contestants are sort of, I feel like, encouraged to like dig at each other, yeah, and to, you know, sort of like talk about who's best and everything. And with the kids, it's a lot more supportive, you know, like they're more encouraged to, you know, to cooperate and help with each other. And if they could carry that over to the adult show, that'd be much better.
Yeah. And this last season, they actually, instead of airing a junior, MasterChef Junior, and then a regular one, they actually just doubled up on Junior. So they did two seasons back to back of MasterChef Junior, just because it went over so well in the ratings. So, but that's really it. I have to say, TV wise, besides all the fights I watch, which there's really nothing consistent there. There's nothing episodic.
No.
But as far as episodics go, my vote is for The Flash.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because I remember saying in my email, like, if we just pick, like, our favorite, like, the best of, you know, 2014, this podcast would just be, like, us rambling about The Flash again. Like, and that's the thing is, like, I think The Flash, like, looms so large because it really was the biggest surprise of 2014, in my opinion. Like, it was, like, the thing that I was really expecting to just be like, you know, whatever. And I just didn't expect to fall so in love with The Flash, you know, and just, you know, that thing just, whatever, I mean, you know, came out of the gate running, you know what I mean? It just, and then just kept moving and developing and developing. So I think The Flash is a really good pick, you know. I mean, there's stuff out there that's more serious or more gritty or whatever, but The Flash is like, it's a fun show, you know, you can have fun with it, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's good popcorn TV.
Yeah. It's got a great cast and, you know, everybody, you know, the effects are fantastic and they don't apologize, like you said, Ian, for the superhero stuff, which is refreshing. You know what I mean? So that's a good pick. I almost picked The Flash myself, but now that you mentioned True Detective, ooh, that's a tough call. But I'm going to stick there was a lot of really good TV and there was a lot of like really great things that happened on TV, you know, this year. You know, like What's Your Face's death in The Walking Dead, Beth, you
yes.
know, that was like seriously hardcore, you know, which a lot of people were not expecting. But like one of my favorite watches of the year is this show called The Americans. And which is interesting because I kind of picked this as my pick and I've seen that the new season is going to start up next week. And The Americans last season, you know, which of course started almost a year ago, was just absolutely fantastic. You know, it's like it really just kind of like kept me on the edge of my seat. And there were some really great little character moments that happened between the actors that were just kind of like breathtaking to me. And and that's the thing about The Americans is that it's very subtle, you know, but this season kind of like ramped it up a notch because basically if you don't know the premise, it's about a husband and wife who are Soviet sleeper agents in the United States in the 80s. And so basically they are like our enemies. They're trying to take down our country. But you get so absorbed in like the family dynamic and because they have kids now and they're in the United States and it's sort of like, you know, they're like, well, we live in this country, but we're also trying to tear it down. And we had kids that are in this country. It's just like some really great stuff. And just some of the acting, you know, by the lead guy, his name is Matthew Rhys. And Rhys, I think that's how you perform it, pronounce it. And Kerry Russell has been like astounding. Kerry Russell especially has just been like a revelation, because I never watched, what was that show, Felicity, that she was on, like that soap show. And I always just kind of thought that she was kind of like a lightweight as far as an actress is concerned, but she's not. She's amazing. She's been like astounding on the show. And this season in particular was a standout in that, you know, basically they weren't, you discovered that they're not the only sleeper agents, and you meet like other families, and somebody starts offing the families. And so they have to figure out, like, how did this happen? Is it, who's killing off, you know, the sleeper agents, and, you know, who's doing this? And it just becomes like this sort of like, you know, whodunit investigation as to like, is it the Soviets? Is it our own people? Is it the Americans? Like, what happens? And the climax, and when you find out towards the end, is just so like heartbreaking and like astounding when you find out like what's going on, that it was just like, oh, this is rough. Like, you know, and then the last episode was just like a hammer to the head, like where it was just like, oh my God. So the reason that I'm picking the Americans is because I just don't think it's a show that gets a lot of credit for what it does. It seems like it's not like on the, you know, quote unquote hot lists. I could be wrong, you know, but honestly, I just thought like it's absolutely fantastic. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Now, True Detective, I got to say, that's up there, you know. Yeah. I mean, that show was just like astounding as well. But, you know, I just got to give props to the Americans, because it's the sort of thing that, you know, people don't, I don't think people expected much of this show, you know, and for me, it's like become must watch TV. You know, it's like, I got to sit down, I got to watch the Americans, I got to pay attention, you know, and that's why I love it. And that's why it totally makes like the best of my 2014, you know, list.
Some good deal. Good
stuff. You guys don't watch the Americans at all?
Nope.
Oh, no. Oh man.
I might now, but you know, it's, I get it's a rough. This year there was so much good stuff that like you just it was a question of like, okay, what good stuff are you going to not pay attention to, because there's no way you can do it. I mean, geez, I went through, I think, 2 DVRs this year, you know?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I mean, there's just so much to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, what are we going to do next? We've done movies. We've done television. What do you want to do next?
I don't know. I've got, like, just a list of, like, stuff that I thought was great. Like a really great Blu-ray release that happened this year. I mean, obviously... Cool. You know, we all know about, you know, the Batman, you know, TV show finally being released.
I have it sitting right here.
Yes, as do I. I've been watching it with my daughter. So that obviously makes the list. And we talked about that on our holiday episode. But Blu-ray release that I was just so looking for, that, you know, had not come out. And I don't even know that it was on DVD, this movie, for a long time. You may have heard of this movie. It's called The Swimmer, and it's a Burt Lancaster flick, and it is one of the craziest. I caught it on Turner Classic Movies one year, like in the middle of the night, and I was just blown away by it. And I don't think I even saw the beginning of the movie. And it's just the craziest, weirdest concept. And some people I've heard like, think it's a little hokey and a little weird, which, you know, maybe some of the acting does get a little over the top, but it's a movie that I've loved because it's like, it's weird. It's like this weird art movie. And the fact that Burt Lancaster, excuse me, who is also like one of my favorite actors of all time, you know, out of the old, you know, the old guard, you know, from the 40s and the 50s, you know, him and Kirk Douglas are like two of my favorites. But, you know, Burt Lancaster is fantastic in this movie. And for him to do this movie, I guess I should explain the plot a little bit, which is basically this guy shows up in the suburbs, right? It's summertime. And he decides that he's going to swim through his neighborhood. He's going to, he lives in a rich neighborhood. I can't remember if it's like Connecticut or New York or I can't remember, but it's, you know, one of these East Coast suburban neighborhoods in the summertime and where everyone has a pool. And so basically what he does, he decides he's going to do is he is going to swim through every pool in the neighborhood to get home. So he's going to stop at all his neighbors' houses. And as he goes through, it starts becoming sort of like a weird parable for like his own life. And as it goes on, you know, at first it's like, oh, everyone's nice to him, blah, blah, blah. But then he comes across other people who he's wronged or who are pissed off at him. And then by the time you get to the end, it's just like a really emotional experience. And I guess, you know, Grindhouse Releasing were the ones that put this out. And I never thought that I would see this like on disc. I'd been trying to look for it and it had never come up. And as soon as it popped up, I was like, done buying it. You know what I mean? I was like, forget it. So this was like one of my favorite like home video releases of the year. So
really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got one too.
Cool.
My favorite, sort of Blu-ray release of the year was, Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, is that out? I didn't even know.
Yes, it is. Brian De Palma's Phantom of the Paradise.
Holy cow.
Which is like just one of the most oddball yet awesome movies ever made. It was...
Holy cow.
Yeah, I can't believe you guys didn't know.
It was out.
Yeah. Oh, it's totally out. It's on... there's a beautiful Blu-ray release of it. And you can see it in just pristine glory with wonderful sound. You know, it's got that amazing Paul Williams soundtrack that just sort of hits all kinds of musical genres. You know, it's sort of a, I guess you, would you say it's like a satire, you know, even though it's sort of like a thriller / musical, it's very satirical about the music industry too. You know, it opens up with this sort of, '50s, you know, neo '50s band singing this song. It's obviously sort of like a Sha Na Na kind of group, you know, about like opens talking about sort of music nostalgia. And you've got this, songwriter Winslow Leach who wants to create a new sound, but he falls under the clutches of Swan, played by Paul Williams, who sold his soul to the devil. And it mashes up Faust with Phantom of the Opera with like Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it just turns into its own unique weird thing. I love this movie.
A great flick.
I saw it in the drive-in, you know, back in the 70s, and you know, it really stuck with me, and it holds up really, really well. It's one of De Palma's most stylish movies, and definitely, you know, it's one of his lower budget ones too.
Yeah,
but it holds up really well, and it's just crazy, crazy good times.
Yeah,
you can also watch it on, you know, VOD, but yeah, get the Blu-ray.
Yeah. The sound must be amazing on the Blu-ray. I wonder, it must be fantastic. Yeah, I remember seeing this movie and just being like blown away, having heard of its existence. And I think, again, I caught this on Turner Classic Movies. You know, obviously I'm a Turner Classic Movies fiend. And I was just like so surprised as to how much I enjoyed it, because you know how like you've heard of a movie and you've been like for a long time and it's been something that you've kind of meant to track down, but you never really get around to it. And then you finally see it, and then sometimes it's a disappointment. Like, this was like better than anything like I could have expected. I remember loving it, just loving it, thinking it was a fantastic flick. Wow. I can't believe that's on Blu-ray. I've got to, I've got to see about getting that. It's, I just added it to my Amazon wish list. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. Hey, Ian, was there anything that came out on video that you enjoyed or you?
No, I haven't bought a video, in solid form, for probably a couple years.
Nice. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Because I don't, we have a couple DVD players, but I mean, the Snowpiercer DVD is awesome.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Thank you, Christian. and no, I can't really speak to this section.
Gotcha.
Of the show.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So we'll go with Snowpiercer for you, which was, yeah, which is again like in my top, you know, lists of movies, you know, that I found to be absolutely fantastic, you know.
Yeah, this year was great for movies.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a really solid year. And speaking as someone who isn't even able to get out to the theater that much, like, yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff that I've been like super super happy with. What about books or comics? Anyone have any mentions there?
Oh yeah, I have a few.
Okay.
And I hope I'm saying the names right. So I've got to mention the Marvel Universe book. It was the novel. I'm gonna get this right because
Marvel: The Untold Story.
Yes.
And nice.
I'm gonna just research the author here. Okay, here we go. Do we have his name? Oh yeah, here he is. Google hooked it up. Sean Howe.
Yeah.
Sean Howe. Yeah.
Well, that came out in 2013, but you found it this year.
So. I found it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. It's still a great book.
What about Drew Friedman's book?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay, I got that this year. And I'm going to say the name of the book. Is
it Portraits of Pioneering Legends?
Yes.
Comic books?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Heroes of the Comics, Portraits Heroes of the of Pioneering the Legends of Comic Books. That did come out in September of 2014. Go!
Okay. Nice. Yeah, this is an amazing book. It's basically what it says on the cover. It's portraits of artists, publishers, pretty much anyone that, I guess, defined American comics and pushed them, the industry, and the comics themselves forward. So what you have is when you open a book, you have the portrait, and then on the opposite page, you have a short history of that person and what their contributions were. And it's fantastic. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. It was a great, great Hanukkah present from my wife. And it's just a beautiful book. I can't say enough of it.
So what is it? It's a book of like portraits of comic book creators, like just paintings or.
Yeah, it's in his style. So there's a sort of caricature vibe to the artwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, Drew Friedman's drawn for, man, just about every major publication out there. His dad used to work at Marvel Comics next to Stan Lee. And then Drew Friedman drew for Mad Magazine back in the day. And it's not only great for the portraits, but it's great for the historical stuff. I mean, for example, they have a Bill Finger entry, and it basically says he's the uncredited creator of Batman. In the entry for Bob Kane, they pretty much say Bob Kane pretty much told everyone that he was the sole creator of Batman. And it's very truthful to, you know, what the current themes are as far as, you know, comics.
I was on a panel at a Comic-Con that Friedman was on, and he was talking about this upcoming, and it sounded amazing from what he described of it.
Yeah, both you guys would totally love it. So those two are, especially Heroes of the Comics, yeah, for sure. For last year release, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, regardless, everyone should read Marvel The Untold Story as well. It's a fantastic book. And I think I don't know if I discovered it last year or the year before last, but that's a fantastic read as well. I mean, it's basically like, you know, seeing how the sausage is made. It's very informational, but it gives you a lot of information, but it can also be very depressing. Yeah. It's a fantastic book. Paul, do you have any like book or comic picks?
Oh, Batman Odyssey was definitely.
That's incredible.
That wasn't this year.
That wasn't this year.
It just felt like it started. I don't know.
I think I actually dislocated from time when I was.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a horrible book.
It is.
It's terrible.
Wait, Paul, did you read that book?
Oh, yeah.
Did you read the whole thing cover to cover?
Oh, yeah.
Really? I couldn't get through it.
Could I follow it at any point? I mean, seriously, at some point, it really felt like, you know, when you're like a little kid and the teacher's talking and like right. you just sort of tune out, like, you know, the lips are moving and there are words, but they don't mean anything. Yeah, wow. that sort of happened to me at times.
Oh, my God. Honestly, Batman Odyssey has the distinction of being the only comic book that I've ever put down because just been like, I can't do this. And I've read a lot of bad stuff. Like I just read like From Hell, I had to put down because it was giving me nightmares. But that's how good it was. You know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. Batman Odyssey, I was like,
I jest about that. But honestly, like, it's going to sound weird, but I guess the comic that I've enjoyed the most, it's not collected yet, and I think it's only on its like third issue, is The Humans, the one about the monkey motorcycle gang.
I haven't even heard of this, The Humans.
Dude, The Humans. I think it was one of my picks that I wrote up a while back. It's basically a 70s biker exploitation movie.
Yeah.
But it's done in a 70s like alternative press kind of style. So all of the characters are apes.
Oh, this is brilliant.
And they're a motorcycle gang. And it works on like absolutely every level. You know, it works as like as an exploitation movie. It works as a like an alternative comic. It works as even like a sort of a pastiche of alternative comics, because they actually design fake 70s era ads that go in the book too. It's incredibly creative. I think it's probably my favorite book that has come out in the last year.
Nice. my sort of one of my favorite things that I discovered this year, there's a couple of comic releases that like really got me excited. The first one was, it's called Tuki. It's by, at least that's how I pronounce it. It's by Jeff Smith of mm-hmm. Bone fame, and it is like, I think, I'm not sure as to whether he's doing it as a web comic first or, you know, but I know that he got the first issue out in print, and I picked that up at Comic-Con and yeah, it's still ongoing. It's a web comic, and then he's collecting it in, you know, print format, but it's hard to explain. It's very much like about a man sort of like in prehistory times, and how, you know, he sort of migrates to a different area. It like explores all these like really weird concepts in it, and it's like, just, you know, it's Jeff Smith, so you can't really go wrong, you know. basically, as soon it sort of explores like how ancient man sort of evolved and sort of, you know, began their great sort of migration patterns and what made them sort of move from place to place. And obviously, its main character, the focus, is on him. His name is Tukey. So that was like one of the big things that I discovered at Comic-Con this year when I was there, and I read it and I was just like, oh wow, this is solid. And you can check it out, you know, on boneville.com. He's got his chapters up there, and it's just like a web comic that, you know, the great, you know, Jeff Smith is up to. Another big release had to do with some reprints that came out. The Marvel, like after Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, that big sort of button at the end with Howard the Duck, finally put the Howard the Duck omnibus back into print. And cool. I was so excited because when I was a kid, I used to love Howard the Duck. And obviously a lot of that stuff flew over my head, but Marvel put it back in print and I snatched it up as soon as it came out. Like, it's been out of print for a long time. And, you know, the only way you could get it is to go on Amazon mm-hmm. and pay hundreds of dollars for it, you know, and I wasn't going to do that, you know, as much as I loved Howard the Duck, I wasn't going to do that, but I picked it up, you know, and the whole thing, you know, with the Marvel omnibus, they recolored it. They, you know, cleaned up the art a little bit. I mean, it just looks fantastic. So,
well, that's really neat. I'd like to check that out because I have the essentials.
The black and white stuff.
The black and white ones. Yeah.
It's really odd because it's sort of the same reaction I had when they came out with the Tomb of Dracula stuff. You're so used to seeing it in that newsprint and like having that old feeling and seeing them kind of cleaned up on these beautiful, like glossy, like white pages. It's mm-hmm. it's a bit off-putting. You're sort of like, hey, wait a minute, this is too clean. But you know, once you settle in, it's like, oh, this looks really nice. You
That's
know,
gonna
what
be
I mean?
The experience you have with the Raid 2.
Yeah, exactly. And then, sort of, I know that I'm doing like three picks, but the other reprint that came out this year, finally. And it was the first comic book I ever collected, you know, and the guy that created it, I've become friendly with him in the past several years, is Captain Carrot and his Amazing Zoo Crew. They Aww. Finally came out with the showcase edition, DC Comics, of Captain Carrot and his Amazing Zoo Crew this year. And I picked it up. And as much as I would rather have like a giant omnibus in color, like at least I was able to get like all these comics like in black and white. I mean, I have the comics themselves, but it's just really great to have that, especially being that that is the comic book that got me into comics in the first place. So, you know, special thanks to DC for finally putting it out there. And I hope that enough people bought it to give Scott Shaw, one of the creators, you know, tons of cash because, he's been a nice guy. So yeah, those are sort of like my, oh, and I got another one.
Another?
I know, I keep piling it on.
Let her rip.
The genius animated Alex Toth book, which I spoke about on our Christmas episode, but I cannot reiterate how amazing this thing is. And that to me was the number one like release of last year. Like of all comics, of all collections, of all anything, the genius animated thing was just like, it was one of those things. It came in the mail. I knew it was coming out. And it's just wall to wall Alex Toth art and cartoon stuff. And the book is gigantic. For the price that I paid, I think $35, it was just such a great deal, especially for somebody like me who's such a big fan of his art. So that to me was, you know, the really, really best thing that came out last year. So I don't know. Any other things that you guys want to talk about from 2014?
Man, we could go on and on and on.
I know. Like
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. Yeah, you're right.
And
I thoroughly enjoyed that. Watching it because I got the Blu-ray of that. I watched it again a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, it's just it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it twice in the theater.
I saw a Baby Groot last week.
Oh, did you? Did you buy it?
No, someone had it, and they were they just had it in the pot, and the guy's like, my fiance got me this. I'm like,
well, that's awesome.
Pretty cool.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, I loved Guardians of the Galaxy 2, obviously one of the big surprises of this year, but I still have to go with Captain America being better, in my opinion, because I thought that movie just kicked all kinds of booty.
All right.
And I know everyone loves Guardians, but I'm like, Captain America was the thing that just, you know, come on, he takes out a Quinjet with the shield. Like, that was just like something straight out of a comic book. It was so, so exciting. All right. So this has been our Part-Time Fanboy Favorite Things episode, Favorite Things of 2014. Hopefully, you know, everyone enjoyed our picks. Just to let everyone know that we did start a mailing list.
Yay!
So there is a form on Part-Time Fanboy. You go over to the right and you enter your email and you will get updates as to, like, you know, whenever new episodes come out. Or you could also do that by checking out our fanbook page, our Facebook page, Facebook page. You got to learn what it's called, Christian, and our Twitter. So, you know, there's lots of ways to check us out. And hopefully we will be here with more episodes in the near future. So my name's Christian Horn. I'm here with Paul Edwards.
That's and me.
Ian Scheller, who joined us late, but that's okay because we love him. And thanks for listening to this episode of Part-Time Fanboy.
Bye, everybody.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com.